All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Tech Gumbo, and I am Haggai Davis III, co-hosting with Haggai Davis II. We'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Our show is conversational, and we talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. Our main sponsor is Cardinal Capital. At Cardinal Capital, they connect your business to capital, and it doesn't matter where your business is. Cardinal Capital has the resources all across the U.S. that are willing to help fund organizations of any size, life cycle, category, or location. Cardinal Capital will work with you to craft the best commercial finance package that you need to achieve your business goals. Whether you are looking to refinance current debts to take advantage of the new government programs and favorable interest rates, or you're trying to finance new equipment, maybe you're trying to acquire another business or expand your existing business, Cardinal Capital has the resources to make it happen. Banks seek out Cardinal Capital to help them with the loans that they cannot do. The Cardinal Capital guys are easy and fun to be around. Contact them today at 225-308-3700 or send them an email at info@cardinalcap.net, and they'll be happy to help you with your commercial finance needs. So, every week we like to take a listener question, and if you have one, you can send it to us on Twitter at TechGumboShow or text us at 225-255-0431 with your question. And this week we got the question of Nest versus Ring. Which one's better? Which one do I get?
Yeah, this is an interesting question because, you know, if you're in the market for one of these digital doorbells with the video cameras on it, there is some difference between the two.
Right. And the, you know, one of them is owned by Google. That is the Nest. And the other one is owned by Amazon. And that is the Ring.
They're certainly the two biggest names in the market. I mean, there are other companies out there that have their own versions. But the big ones out there is the Ring and the Nest. There's the Video Doorbell Pro. There's Peephole Cam. There's Doorbell 3. You know, but we're not going to get into those. We just really want to spend some time talking about, you know, the two big boys. And so the first thing you have to decide is, do you actually need a video doorbell?
Right. You have to think about, okay, how much traffic is coming to your door? What are you looking to get out of it? If you're living in a small town and there's no one on your street except your neighbors anyway, well, then you're probably not gaining a whole lot. But if you're in a more busy part of town, maybe there's things happening outside your door that you want recorded, that you know, you're worried about security or things like that. That's whenever a video doorbell.
If you're worried about delivery pirates, you know, taking Amazon deliveries and things like that, this is where this becomes a little more handy for you.
Absolutely. Next, you need to think about, are you already using one of these two systems? Do you already use the Google Assistant somewhere? Do you already use the Alexa Assistant somewhere? Because both of them very much are built into the whole ecosystem and want to work with only their own ecosystem.
That's right. So, you know, if you like one, if you're into Google, if you're into Amazon, that's going to be the leading decision maker for you on this. But you have some other ideas that you need to consider. Are you going to pay for retention of the video? So do you want to be able to go back for 24 hours? Do you want to be able to go back for a week? How long do you want to keep that video of what's happened outside of your door? Now you're talking about additional money more than just buying the hardware.
Right, because that's space, you know, this is high quality video footage. And so 24 hours at 1080p, that starts to add up as far as server space goes. And so it's not a whole lot. The Ring is $30 a year, whereas the Nest is $60 a year. So, you know, it is something to note. But if you're getting your peace of mind, you're getting your security, that seems pretty in line here.
Yeah, so, you know, either way, if you're a Google or if you're an Amazon, that's going to lead you down the path to where, which way you want to go. And these things are universal. They will install over most every doorbell that's already out there. So you're not going to have that kind of issue to worry about. I installed one in my mom's house. And yes, my 85-year-old mom has the Google Nest doorbell, and she doesn't always know how to use it, but she has it.
And there it is. And that's one of the things that the Ring Video doorbell is one of the simplest to put up. There's no additional wires. It's battery operated. That's the one wherever you don't know what you're doing. You're not tech savvy. You just want the camera on the front door. This is the one. The Ring Video Doorbell 3 is going to be the simplest and the easiest to install.
So that's the wrap up on the digital doorbells. And we really thank our listener for that question. We actually had several listeners this week, and that was kind of cool. So thanks.
Absolutely. So moving into our main topic for this episode, we want to talk about Europe has finally sat down and starting to set some guidelines and some rules on artificial intelligence.
That's right. The EU, and the EU is not alone. Most every country out there, I mean, the Biden administration is loaded with people who are very big critics of artificial intelligence. China is breaking down on it. Britain has got a bunch of laws themselves. So these artificial intelligence rules do have some teeth in it.
Right. So for the diving into what Europe is doing, because this is the one that's most well developed, it's pretty new as well. They are doing a lot of broad, vague stances right now. They are saying that they're looking to limit high-risk applications of artificial intelligence, which is a good first step. Some people are worried that it doesn't quite go far enough, but they're definitely happy that we are now getting some official legislation, some official ideas out there.
Yeah, they're the thing that they're most trying to break down on is police agencies and governments doing facial recognition. That's the first thing that they're going after.
Right. The AI use of facial recognition is something we've talked about before on the show because of the way that it has its biases, it has its flaws in it, and there's such a strong negative downside to where if, you know, the police say, this is it, the computer said with 99% certainty, that's the guy from the footage, and you're like, that wasn't me, and the main piece of evidence is this digital footage, it's really important we get that right. And so that's one of the key places. But for example, this European legislation only prohibits real-time use of the artificial intelligence. It doesn't prohibit going and looking backwards at older security footage.
And, you know, this they've not really, you know, spent much time with these artificial intelligence rules on autonomous vehicles or drones or a whole lot of that kind of stuff. Right now, this is mostly about the facial recognition because it is still so very flawed.
And it's also something wherever we're already seeing it. Autonomous vehicles are still, you know, a little while away. They're still not here yet, whereas the facial recognition artificial intelligence is on the streets today. And so another place that EU has said that they're looking to, you know, lay down some rules is it would require companies to inform users whenever the AI is trying to detect people's emotions or classify them according to things like age, sex, race, orientations, political and sexual, because that's really complicated. Your own political orientation might change or you might have different ideas. And so if the computer thinks you're one thing, but you disagree with that, the computer has to tell you, hey, based upon these posts, I think that you believe this, and you get a chance to say, no, computer, that's not right about me.
And we're mostly happy with that because when, as we've discussed many times on the show about artificial intelligence and the problem that everything was designed by white guys and it doesn't know how to interpret, you know, black people or Asian or, you know, it's too early in the whole artificial intelligence adoption to have facial recognition be that strident.
Right. It's really important that we spend more time getting it right. And it's also really important that the general public understands how it's being used, that they understand whenever they are interacting with artificial intelligence and that whenever artificial intelligence is interacting with them. If you get a phone call and it has to say, this is a digital assistant, because a couple of years ago, there was the Google digital assistant that placed the order from a Chinese restaurant, or it made the hair appointment, and you would not know that it was a computer just listening to it, even down to the fact that the computer said, sometimes. It was that convincing. And so those are the types of things wherever it's good for the person to know that some AI is on the other end there.
So until the artificial intelligence is developed to be much more fair and ethnically sensitive, for now, the facial recognition is most everywhere around the world just being put on pause, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Something which wasn't paused, it was officially ended, was Adobe Flash. And Microsoft is not just ending Flash, they are going in and yanking it out.
So they said about a year ago they were no longer going to support Flash. And even in one of the releases that came out in January, I think, it mostly tried to remove Flash. But there was some workarounds to where if you had run an update or if you had installed Flash from Adobe directly, it was still there, even though Adobe has said kill it. And so now with the update that's going to come out in July, it's going to go hunt across your computer and look for Flash and get rid of it.
Yeah. Microsoft has said, we are done with Flash. It is over. It is no longer. That era of the internet has ended.
It was a great thing when it came out in the late 90s. It was really good in the early 2000s. But it is a massive security risk to have it on your computer now. It's got to go. And this is another good thing.
Right. So the last major topic we're going to go talk about today is Facebook. We haven't really gone after Facebook in a couple weeks, and we figured it's about time here. So
yes,
one of the messaging companies, a company that does, you know, communication app called Signal. Signal is very big on encrypting communications and very big on privacy. They started an ad campaign on Facebook that Facebook didn't find nearly as funny as they did. One example is, you got this ad because you're a newlywed into Pilates and you're a cartoon person. This ad used your location to see your exact neighborhood, and you're into parenting blogs thinking about adoption. And so the ad was designed to show, hey, look, here's all of the different things we know about you. We're tying all of them together. Here's how the sausage is actually made. It's kind of creepy, huh?
Yeah. This ad was targeting as many different buzzwords as they could find that you have ever been interested in. And it went around, and Facebook said, okay, they shut it down, because it was just getting a little too hot around the collar for some of the feedback Facebook was receiving.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable to have the ad be able to say, hey, look, this is all the things that we actually know about you. And that was the whole point that Signal was trying to make, was that they are an encryption service. They are about privacy. Signal does not collect your data in the same way. And they were trying to reveal to users, hey, look, this is what Facebook knows. Do you know how much Facebook knows about you?
Yeah. And so, you know, we've done here several months back a story about the 87 different categories of data that Facebook collects on you. And so when you see something like this, where this was an ad that was specific to somebody who had done all these different searches, to have those buzzwords pop up in their face, and you have to go, whoa, I hope my neighbors don't see what's being posted on my Facebook feed, because, you know, they're going to know that I'm, oh man, that's just.
Yeah, it's, and even if it's things which I would say out in public, it's just weird to have them all together like that presented to you in such a way. And that's, I think, the real strength of this ad campaign is to put in your face, hey, look, you know that, like, you have this one thing here and that one thing over there, but Facebook's ability to tie all of them together, that's what the real strength is here.
I mean, there was another one of the ads where they were talking about how they loved K-pop music, and they were single, and, you know, they were interested in this kind of person, and, you know, just like, wow, that's way too specific. Even though these ads are generalized, because it didn't say, hey, this is Jim Smith. It just said, this is you, without using your name.
Right. They know all these characteristics about you, to the point that if someone were to sit there and Google all of these things, they might be able to put you back together.
Mm.
But the last little bit that we want to go after Facebook for today is discussing their decision to, or their Facebook's Supreme Court's decision to uphold the ban of Trump here.
So Facebook put together this panel of folks, roughly 39 people, I think it was, in the group, and they decided, no, we don't think former President Trump should be allowed back on Facebook, unless you, Mark Zuckerberg, want him back on.
Right. And that's kind of the weird part about this group, is that, you know, they released a 12,000-word report based upon 10,000 public comments, and these people are all paid a lot of money, and that, you know, there was a whole lot of thinking done about this, and they cited the United Nations documents on guiding principles on business and human rights. But at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of a theater that
they punted.
And even if they would have said something more absolute, Facebook doesn't have to listen to them. It kind of should, because it wants these people to look official. But at the end of the day, they're still part of the Facebook corporation.
This oversight board, which is made up of former judges, legal experts, even a Nobel laureate, is, you know, they were nicknamed Facebook Jail. And they just said, no, we're not gonna decide right now. We think the ban is still good for now. But if Facebook wants to let him back on, Mark Zuckerberg, if you want him, you know, Donald Trump back on Facebook, then you can go ahead and do it. But we think for right now, it's probably a good idea not to.
Because ultimately, they weren't deciding whether or not the ban was good for society or bad for society. They were trying to decide if the ban meets Facebook's policies. And so if Facebook just changed their policies, which they can do arbitrarily pretty quickly, well, now all of a sudden you could say, oh, well, he has to come back, or no, he can never come back. And so whenever your jury is held up to be so highly esteemed, but the laws that the jury is deciding on can be changed so quickly, it kind of undermines the strength of the jury's decision here.
Which is exactly the problem. There is no legal process that big tech can be held accountable. Section 230 of the 1996 Telecommunication Decency Act gives, you know, big tech, Google, Facebook, you know, Twitter, all of them, it gives them a pass to where they are not held responsible. So if they want to do it, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. It's just, there's no consistency. It's at the whim. If all of a sudden they decided they didn't like Black Lives Matter and wanted to kick them off, they could do that just because they wanted to. If they, you know, doesn't matter which group, if they wanted to go after anybody on the political right or the political left, if they wanted to come after Tech Gumbo, they could, just because they don't like two guys named Haggai talking on the radio.
Yeah, and that's kind of the weird part, the uncomfortable part here, is that Facebook has a tremendous amount of power and Twitter has a tremendous amount of power, and being able to say, no, you can't be on our platform, because there's so much communication that happens on these platforms.
When you have 3 billion people on the planet using Facebook and you're singling out former President Trump, that's where the really, I mean, I'm not saying I agree or think he should be back on or any of that, but you've singled one person on the planet when you got 3 billion users.
Yeah, it just shows they really need a lot more work into this process. It needs to be a lot more efficient, a lot stronger. And we're going to continue to talk about it because it needs to continue to improve. And if you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. And the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear previous episodes, you can check out our podcast available on almost every platform, including TuneIn, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Deezer, Player FM, and more. When you're at those sites, be sure you subscribe so you get notifications every time we post a new episode.
And if you like our show, if you have some suggestions, let us know. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're at Tech Gumbo Show, or you can text us at 225-255-0431. So please follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. And thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.